This is the 1895 podcast, official podcast of Shelburne FC, bringing you news, views and interviews from inside Tolka Park, Dublin's finest since 1895. Here's your host, Stephen Duty.
Hello, welcome to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne Football Club. Defeat in Galway saw Duffer reach for the hairdryer, while on Saturday, a Gemma Quinn hat-trick blew the Rebels back to Munster. Monday came, the champions arrived, and the Reds left with a share of the spoils. There's all that, plus we'll talk about whether Gemma Quinn should start this Saturday versus Wexford. What on earth is a Richmond derby, and probably the biggest shock of the entire season? Duffer is in everyone's head. Joining me today, Ben Cleary. Ben, how are you?
Hello, Duty. How are we?
I'm very good. You had a particularly difficult Monday. So you weren't due to be here, but nobody else was available. I tried. Couldn't get anyone. So here we are on a Wednesday evening at 10 o'clock, finally sitting down to record the pod. So,
look, we are hoping for a bit of squad rotation, but
yeah,
when you need your star striker, I'm happy to be here. So,
no, nobody wants to take that jersey. Can you believe that?
Yeah. It's a tough act to follow. It's not really, don't worry.
Busy week, Ben. The football end of it started over west on Friday. A disappointing evening. Obviously, no travelling support. We were lucky enough to be able to go to the games because of our media duty. So we'll start there. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I think the manager summed it up best. It just wasn't good enough from start to finish. There was a few flashes maybe of something, but the drive, desire, it just didn't seem to be there. Galway were up for it from the first whistle, and they went for the jugular. Like, it's like they didn't give us a break. They just peppered the box with everything. Sure, even A. Dervin looked like a player, and that's, yeah, it was a tough watch.
Ben, I'm shocked you're throwing shade at A. Dervin.
No, I'm not throwing shade. I'm just saying he looked like a serious player. It's out in the wing. It's not really what you'd expect, but I know that's where he's played for Galway, but he caused problems all night.
He did. To be fair, our lack of effort made like his particularly high amount of effort look out of this world. It was just very flat from the start, I thought. That front three, as it kind of panned out to be, Farrell, Liam Burt, Boydie, just didn't happen. It did not click. It just looked really flat. I mean, just individually, the performances were fairly shy, to be fair. Like, that's probably as blunt as you can get with it. Yeah. It was
a bit of a domino effect. Like, if one cog doesn't work, the rest of them won't turn. So if there's three or four having a bad performance, there's a strong chance it's going to end up being the full team. Because, look, you can will yourself into something, but if no one else is there with you, it's very hard. And I think the manager said that. He questioned the effort, the desire, and he demanded a response.
Yeah, the manager coming out like that and, you know, questioning the players on Friday, what did he said he was sick of them. I think at one stage said he had no leaders, bar, I think he name dropped Paddy Barrett, Mark Coyle, if I'm not mistaken. No men in the dressing room. Like, really, he went in really hard on the players, and I don't know whether the reaction from supporters online and stuff stemmed from Duffer's kind of reaction. I don't know whether the reaction from supporters would have been as extreme if it hadn't been for Duffer's interview after the game, but like, I watched the game back. Those ones especially where the manager's overly critical, I always go back and watch again just to kind of see what he's getting at. Like, at the time watching the game, I wasn't watching it going, geez, we've been absolutely stinking. That's what I thought at the time, but when I thought back on it, I spent the whole game going, geez, Burt's been shy. Jeez, Boydie's not been great. Jeez, Shane Farrell's not been great. And I kind of individually went through nearly all the players being like, jeez, he's not having a great game. And as you say, like, although that's a lot of cogs to not be turning to really kind of stem a performance. But we just, in fairness, probably give a bit of credit where it's due. Galway came out, as you'd expect, similar to the way they were in Talca, like rabid dogs closing down. They pressed us really, really high early on, and we just didn't have answers for them. Like the amount of ball that we just aimlessly had to send forward, which, look, Boydie probably had a particularly off night. It's probably not offending anybody saying that. And when you don't have that kind of platform to play off, you know, really, we kind of struggled. We didn't manage to play through Galway at all. Like, I don't remember us putting together any kind of meaningful play in their half, especially in the first half. Whatever about we huffed and puffed a little bit in the second half, but we never seemed to have control of the game, which, in a weird way, there's been other games this season where, even though we haven't had possession, I felt we've been in control. Didn't feel like that on Friday. The goal, again, like, it just comes from being a bit lax, giving the ball away, and they got in behind. I think, if I remember right, it was Gano's player kind of peeled off him in the box to tap it in, and straight away, as I said, we were at the game. Gano just stuck his hand up and it was like, right, I should have been in there. But kind of a comedy of mistakes, and maybe more worrying for me was that we didn't even look like we were going to score in that second half, really, did we?
No, I just don't think the chances were there. Like, as you said, there was a bit of huffing and puffing, but there was nothing tangible where you'd say, oh, that's a chance, that could have been something. Like, I just don't think we ever really got out of the traps. I don't think we really started. I'd say it's an outlier of a performance. Like, it's something you probably, well, I'd hope, and I don't think we'd see from this group again. But it's just, you can't, I think, expect to win a game like that when the intensity and desire of the other team is just so much higher by the looks of it. And I think the manager referenced that in his post-match as well. Like, they wanted it more.
Did you feel at the time, Ben, that there was a lack of effort?
I think there, just being there, yeah, a little bit, just because, I don't know, it was all very, like, casual.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that. Like, in my head, like, a lack of effort is not chasing balls down. It's not, you know, not going full-blooded into tackles, not winning your headers. That's what I think of with lack of effort.
Yeah.
When I watched it back, it was more a lack of, I don't know what the word is, but we just weren't doing the things that we've done well this year. Like, fast forwarding to Monday night's game against Rovers, we invited Rovers on, then we played past them an awful lot. Like, JJ had slid a little ball through to John O'Sullivan and that, and then we were away kind of running at their defence. Like, we were able to switch the ball out to the likes of a Will Jarvis. Whereas Friday, I just don't think we did the basic stuff that we've done very well all season. Like, off the top of my head, a few aimless kind of balls down the line. Like, Tariq was kind of forced into aimless ones, and like, Boydie wasn't there to try and hold it up. And like, usually a ball would bounce off Boydie or Matty Smith and it'd fall to a Burt or a Jarvis or a Farrell, in his case on Friday, and then they'd be able to run at defenders, but just didn't. Nothing seemed to click. I wasn't surprised by the manager's reaction, but when I watched the game back, I was a bit kind of, was it that bad? But then I think part of it is, and I know I need to get rid of this attitude, because like, the only way we'll move on, obviously not through me specifically, but as a kind of a mentality for a fan base, need to realise that the standard's a bit higher now. Like, a performance like that Galway game wouldn't have been as big a deal under Morrow or under Johnny Mack or under Alan Matthews. I don't think we would have been as offended by it. Whereas now, that bar is so high that, like, an average performance, which I think Friday was, now looks absolutely deplorable. And like, it's a bit scary that like, Galway is a difficult place to go, don't get me wrong, and like, they're dogged, they work really hard, they're organised, but it is still a difficult game, and for us to be so unbelievably disheartened and downtrodden leaving there Friday, it's probably a good sign in the long run, I would have said.
Yeah, I think I'd be inclined to agree. Like, you look at the game, and look, we've seen much worse performances from Shell's teams over the years, especially in the very, very bad days. So, like, you get a 5 out of 10 performance, maybe, and it looks like it's the end of the world. And I think that's what the reaction was, because people hold this team in such a high esteem. I think it's something we've touched on recently, like when we've gone back and we've looked at even our five-a-sides, like we've had current players in them, and look, you could say recency bias, or it could just be a special team, and I think that is kind of what you're looking at. They are a really, really special team, I think, and when you get a performance that doesn't fit what you've seen or what you're used to, I think you're just almost shocked into, you just don't know what to do, and I think that was the general reaction. But I don't think it's all doom and gloom. I think, as I said, a complete outlier. I don't think we will see that again. And I think there was a big turnaround then for Monday.
I try to look at the positives of it, and like, it's good that the manager does get the reaction on Monday.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at it from his point of view, and he's right in saying, I shouldn't need to, you know, come out and have a go at the players and say I have no leaders for people to step up, kind of be a leader. Like, in terms of performances from Friday, I know the mood has changed now after the result Monday, but was there anyone you could kind of point at Friday and say, yeah, he was pretty good?
Look, I think JJ just doesn't get the credit he deserves, just across the board. I think Friday, he was one of those that, without him kind of marshalling the midfield and kind of carrying the ball a little bit, and making those passes, getting us out of pressure, it could have looked a lot worse. I thought he was really good, but he's been so consistent over like the season, the start of the season anyway, and over the last few years, you just kind of forget about him sometimes. And I think you said it afterwards, and I said it to you, poor JJ always gets stung with the
bad games. I really did feel bad, because it's a bit of a running joke now. What was the other
UCD?
UCD, that stinker of a game as well that he got stung with. But it's one of those things where he's kind of the, I don't know what it was in that Galway game. He just looked like one of the experienced players. I don't know what it is. I know, like, manager said, you know, there was no voice in the dressing room. I just don't think JJ is that type of fella. Don't think he is a roar or a shouter, or, you know, I don't think he's going to intimidate you into performing the same way, maybe.
He's a leader by example. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's like, example he does, rather than fear. Yeah.
You just want to do what he does and emulate it and get to the level that he's playing at, because that is the standard, essentially.
Yeah. It's funny to think back. I remember having a conversation. It was actually after the cup final, I think. I think it was the cup final, and like a few Reds fans kind of saying, oh, you know, JJ Lunny's days could be numbered. You know, probably not up to the level that Duffer wants to get to, and so on, so on. And I think he's one of the most important players we have at the moment, for just for that ability. And Coyler has started to get really good at it as well. That ability to, like, JJ kind of have your heart in your mouth at times when he receives the ball off a centre back or whatever, and he might take an extra touch or a little cut back or a little drag back, and you're kind of going, oh, not there. But the importance of that when it comes off, and then like that, being able to slip a ball in, because something we didn't do enough of Friday was go from kind of centre back straight up. And I'm not talking about lumping a ball forward, but like a long pass rather than a hoof up to a Boydie or a in behind for a Jarvis or something like that. We didn't do enough of that Friday. I didn't think it was all a bit kind of passive and easy for Galway. Whereas like JJ was in full flow on Monday against Rovers, and he was, some of the passes he was picking out, he was brave, kept getting on the ball, even though he's been hassled, being harried. I think he just JJ has the cigar out most of the time. I don't think he's too fazed by, you know, whether teams close him down or don't close him down. Don't really think he gives a shit. It's like, I'm going to do it either way. Like, press me all you want, but...
Yeah, like, he does play with that kind of confidence and a bit of elegance where it's just, he gets on the ball and, like, I'm never really worried because, as you said, like, he just turns, he gets away from his man and he can play an unbelievable pass into one of the half spaces and someone gets it on the turn and there's a shot on goal 2 seconds later and you're like, where did that come from? He just sees the game really well, I think, and reads it.
I'd agree. He's so intelligent. Like, he uses his body really well. Just has a habit of adding balls on when he has to. I've so impressed with JJ since the start of the season. He just seems like he's grown or something in the off season. He's become such a really important player. Another one who really impressed me and has impressed me every time I've seen him this year. This will probably, a few heads will pop off at this one, but John O'Sullivan. Like, I know I've said it already, but his work rate is just incredible. He got a bit of stick, actually, from some people after the Galway game. When I watched it back, he didn't give a lot of ball away. Yeah, he's not the type of fella that's going to go, you know, skin 2 and 3 players and whip a ball into the box, but doesn't give possession away a whole lot. And that showed in the Rovers game as well, that, like, he kept us ticking over. He had a couple of little runs. He set up a great chance for John Martin just inside the second half on Monday. I'm really impressed. I'd love him to get a bit of a run in the team, to be honest. I love that kind of... I nearly shaped up like a 4-3-3 on Friday. It's like JJ, John O'Sullivan and Caffrey. I'd love to see a JJ, John O'Sullivan and Mark Coyle kind of tree. Look, don't know where Coyle is injury-wise now at the moment. I don't know. Did anything come of that Monday? Was that... Did we get any update?
I think the manager... I did ask him about it on Monday in the post-match. He just said it's kind of a day-by-day thing. They'll just assess it when they can. And that's pretty much it. He just said it's a bit of a weird one, that's all.
Right, we'll move on to Monday while we're on it. A great result. Look, I think anyone would have bitten your hand off for a point to Hunter Rovers before the game, just with the run of form we'd been on. I do think a bit much has been made of that, to be totally honest as well. But a solid point, really good performance, and the manager got the reaction he was looking for, fair to say.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he got the reaction in abundance. I think, look, there was early pressure from Rovers. They hit the bar early on, and you're like, oh God, could this be a hangover? Straight away, it's just, no, absolutely not. The intensity levels were way up. And look, you can argue if it's the occasion, whatever. Doesn't matter. It's the response that the manager wanted. And I think absolutely a massive point. The manager called it, I think it was a chess match, but I turned someone during the game and I said, it's kind of like a boxing match, punch, counter punch. And it just, there was an answer for everything, it looked like. It just, like, I saw some people call it a boring game. Like, it's not a, you know, it's not a TV game, no goals. I thought it was an incredible game, to be honest.
I think anyone who, this kind of sound a bit shitty, I'd say, but anyone who kind of understands football or, like, you know, actually likes watching a football match, you know, isn't just looking for goals and stuff like that. It was a fascinating, it was a real kind of tactical game, I thought. As the manager said, chess match, you liken it to boxer match. It was like, right, you'll have a pop, we'll have a pop, you have a pop, we'll have a pop. And I had the miserable existence on Monday of having to watch the game at home, which is a terrible, terrible experience. So much better being at the game. But, like, after the first 5 minutes, I was worried. I was going, oh no, please no. They obviously hit the crossbar, did another chance from a corner. They started really brightly, and
it was like 4 corners in the first few minutes or something, wasn't it?
It was mad. It was mad. But, like, after that was kind of their main spell in the game. They huffed and puffed kind of towards the end a little bit as well. But it's another game where, like, if you didn't know anything about the league here and you just flicked that game off, you probably wouldn't know who was the Premier Division team and who was the First Division team. Or the, what am I talking about? The defending champions and the team top of the league at the minute, you wouldn't have known which was which.
Yeah, that's you having a little bit of hangover from all our years in the first division. Absolutely. I think, like, you look at that game and it is a real top of the table clash. That's what the manager said, because it was two top sides. Like, if someone said to you at the start of the year, we play Rovers twice at home and they wouldn't beat us, and, you know, you'd probably bite someone's hand off for an opportunity like that. Like, I think we've looked really, really strong against them. And you look at the quality they have that's not even in the team through injury and other things, but, like, it is, I think it's a benchmark of the side and maybe how far they've come to actually just go toe to toe and get respect from Rovers. And I think it was a really interesting match. I think we had the better share of the chances. I might be controversial to say, but I think we were the better team. I think we probably, if we did get the goal, I think it would have been deserved. I think Will Jarvis had a really good chance where he cuts in and forces Pauls into a save. And it's just one of those where he's done it before. It's kind of his trademark when he cuts in and you're like, this is going to hit the back of the net. But really interesting match. I think it was a brilliant watch. But I think it was a big, big improvement. And I think it's exactly what was needed after Galway, 100%.
You mentioned that save from Leon Pauls, from Jarvis cutting inside. I remember that one because he shanked it. He kind of didn't really get hold of it. But the save, it kind of went under the radar. Even on the telly, they didn't really talk about it much more afterwards. The save Pauls made from Paddy Barrett's effort from the edge of the box, something else as well.
Yeah, Paddy just has that in his locker. And I just think he can hit a ball, and for the keeper to actually force it out, like, I thought it was going in. I was nearly half celebrating before it even hit the net, because I had so much confidence. Due to, you know, our shout from set pieces, I'll always turn to Reggie or Darren or yourself, and I'll always shout Paddy Barrett from every corner and free kick, even if he's not on the pitch. And I turned and I had no one to say it to, but I still said it nonetheless, and I was hopeful. But unbelievable save. Like, that's, it's a match winner. It's a point saving save for them. I think that goes in, it's an entirely different game, and I think we probably would see it out.
I think because of the time of the game, that save happened. Like, if that happens with the last kick of the game, everyone is saying, oh, Leon Paul saved him a point. But I think because it was so early in the game, got lost a little bit in the rest of the 90 minutes, but I couldn't believe it. He just dragged it out of the corners. Ridiculous save. But Paddy Barrett ended up being man of the match. He's a mad one, Paddy, because, like, when he comes out to do his warm-up for anything, he's such a big fella. Like, I don't, the telly and that doesn't really do him justice, I don't think, because when you're beside him, like, he's just, I think he could actually be wider than he is tall. He's a mountain of a man.
Yeah, man, mountain, Paddy Barrett.
And yet he has that bit of kind of finesse at times as well, right? Like, if you look at him, you think he's going to be some loose cannon running around, like, beating his chest and, like, eating raw meat off a bone. That's what he looks like. And then, like, he can play. And, like, him and Gav Malloy, I know there was a bit of a running joke on here, like, were we ever going to concede? And, like, were they the best centre-back partnership in the league? They take some beating. Like, Paddy has just been like a revelation. I remember when we signed him as well, there was people, you know, worried, oh, is he a bit, you know, washed up as he passed it, the legs are gone, you know, he had been injured at Pats before we signed him. But it's just another on a long list of players that the manager and the staff have just dragged an extra kind of 20-30% out of. But there was changes were going to be expected on a normal Friday Monday weekend. That's not even considering the performance from the Galway game. But I think, what was it, Cam, John Martin, Matty Smith and Jarvis all came in?
Yeah, I think so.
When you had a very busy Monday, we'll come to that shortly, what your Monday entailed. But what did you think when you seen the team sheet originally?
I I was optimistic, to be honest. I think when you look at Galway and the names that maybe were left out or rested, you expected a response of the likes of a Will Jarvis. You expected something from him coming in. I thought Matty Smith was actually quite good. I think he offers an awful lot in terms of just, he will just run himself into the ground for you.
It's hold up play. Arse.
Yeah, his hold up play, I think, is very underrated as well. Like, people don't realise how big he is as well. Maybe it's the telly, maybe it's other things, but he's a big fella. Like, he will hold the ball up and he'll find a runner. Like, he, no problem doing that. But I think he's another one that maybe went under the radar. John Martin as well will run himself into the ground. I think he's a pressing monster. I think a centre back's worst nightmare. He doesn't stop.
He's like poetry in motion when he get, like, he lurried into a tackle. I think it might have been on Pico, and it was very early in the game. I was, geez, that's a real, you know, gonna stamp me authority on this game. He completely lumped him. I think it was Pico, lumped him out of it, sent him up in the air. But I'm starting to wonder now, might be a bit dramatic, but have we too many, like, different types of option up there? Like, we don't really have a set, you know, number nine. It's not like, right, Boydie starts, or John Martin starts, or Matty Smith starts, or Dean Williams starts as a number nine, and we're going to do the same thing. You know, it's going to be up, direct, get it in, drop it off. It kind of changes with whoever's up there. And I just wonder, does that affect the kind of the flow of the game a little bit? Because we never really got going in Galway with it. We did get going on Monday against Rovers. Like, John Martin had a few that he just kind of trapped it, dropped the ball off. Even he just becomes a bit of a nightmare for centre-halves, and they start miscuing their headers and stuff like that, and then it's easy for the likes of a Jarvis, a Farrell, whoever it might be in the final third, to pick it up and get running at people. But it's like, would it nearly be easier to just have Boydie, or just have John Martin, or just have Matty Smith, so that you know, right, it's going to be this every week? Is that me being overthinking a little bit, maybe?
Maybe a little bit. I just think when you have those different options, it's actually very beneficial, because teams just don't know what to expect, depending on who you play. Like, you'll get a different game from any of them in different positions. So they have a lot to offer. And I think it's just that kind of bit of unpredictability that is actually more of a benefit than it is a hindrance.
Speaking of not knowing what to expect, Cam obviously came into the team on Monday. I don't mean we don't know what to expect from Cam. You know exactly what you're going to get from Cam. But Tyreek kind of playing in that, it's the position we've seen him play in preseason against Longford. And he caused carnage in that game.
We now said look, that in Longford when he played there. He was like, he is absolutely marshalling this whole game. And look, take it with a pinch of salt. It's Longford in preseason. It's not like the greatest thing you're going to see in the world. But against Rovers, to come into that kind of new role, he was unbelievable. I just think he controlled tempo. I think he pushed the ball really well. He held it as well. Like, he just, again, I'd sing his praises every week, because I think he's been one of our most consistent. And I just think he's a really important part of the squad, because especially for his just adaptability, like, he's gone on the right. He can do stuff there. He's played at his natural position as a left back. He's come in left wing back. He played kind of centrally against Rovers. Like, the manager said it before, he's just had such a footballing brain and such a footballing intelligence that he'll just throw him anywhere and, you know, he'll get something from him.
I totally agree. That's nail on the head stuff there, Ben. But someone who does deserve an awful lot of credit, and it feels like I kind of have a different one of these every week, but Cam, anytime he's called on, he is always just consistently really solid, does what he's asked. No frills, no fuss, just, yeah, I'll get in, I'll do my defending, I'll get forward in the overlap when you need me to, I'll do what I need. Has he kind of been maybe a victim of, the manager obviously wants us to be quite fluid in games and be able to change, and like, we can go from a 3 to a 5 to a 4. Has he kind of been a victim of how good Tyreek is, if that makes sense? Because Tyreek will get the nod because he can play all those different kind of positions. Like, has Cam been maybe harshly left out of the team?
I think performance based, like, he's genuinely been very consistent anytime he's called on, as you said. But with Tariq playing the way he is, it's hard to get in. Like, but he's such a great option. Like, when you do need to have that bit of rotation, I thought he was absolutely brilliant on Monday. His defensive duties, I think he does it really well. He doesn't really bottle out of tackles, which I really like. Like, he's straight in, like, he's hard nosed. He gives us all, I think. And I don't think you could question his desire anyway. On Monday, I thought he did everything he needed to do really well and really consistently. But I think just the consistency he gives the squad in rotation, like, he will come in as part of a back three as a centre half and he'll put in a shift. He'll go left back, he'll go left wing back. He does have that kind of adaptability. So I think he is massive for the squad, and I think he's played his role excellently this season.
Yeah, as always, every week I put the question box out on Instagram just for comments from people. Big T was on. He said, look, it's not a question, but Cameron Ledwidge deserves a massive shout out. He's been so good when called upon this season. It's a credit to him. And I would say it's probably a credit to Cam's attitude that, you know.
He's a completely different player, I think, than like when he first came here. Like, I think the maturity levels, especially this season, like, he seemed to mature an awful lot.
And, like, he had gone out of favour. Like, he was one of the ones I maybe in the off-season was like, I could see Cam probably leaving just because he'll want to play. That same kind of, like, A. Dervin, Conor Kane type situation where, you know, I don't want to be sitting on the bench. I want to get out and play. But it's a testament to his attitude.
Look, he's backed himself, hasn't he? Like,
and that's what you have to do. Like, not, you know, you have to just trust that I am going to get in, and when I get in, I'm going to do a seriously good job. And it's probably getting to a point now, it's getting harder and harder to leave him out. I think he's just been so consistent. And, like, obviously, look, games will start coming a bit quicker. Hopefully we have a European run to come, so look, I'm sure he'll get more game time then. But yeah, I think it's fair to mention Cam, because
look, it's probably a good selection headache to have, to be honest. That you have two really informed players and that bit of competitive edge to get into the side. I thought, you know, when I saw the team sheet, I did think we were going to go into the five. I thought Tariq was going to play left wing back, and I thought Cam was going to be part of the back three. But seeing Tariq play in the midfield, it just gave us a little bit of an edge, I think.
And it did. Cam, it was just
brilliant.
Yeah, it was something a bit different. Especially that one, like, with Tariq there, because, like, kind of took me a minute when the game started to be like, is Cam, where is Cam? Is he playing as a centre-back? Is he a left centre-back? Is he a left full? What is he? And, it helps keep teams guessing, because, like, it's hard. When you see a team sheet now coming out for Shells, it's, like, it takes a few reads to kind of say, yeah, right, I'd say that's what we're probably doing. Whereas before, it was very kind of set and you kind of knew exactly what you were going to get. Now it's like, it seems to be keeping everyone guessing, which, look, long may that continue. You mentioned their selection headaches. Big one coming from the manager on Friday, because I believe Paddy Barrett is suspended. So, right, Ben, you're Joey O'Brien for today. Yourself and Duffer are sitting down across the table from each other. And it's right, what are we going to do on Friday? What do you do?
I think it's obviously dependent on other injury updates. Look, if you have a Mark Hoyle back in the side, I think it's very easy to just shift Cam across and then bring Tariq back. But if not, I thought Lewis Temple was really good when he was called on in the first game of the season.
So do I. I'd have no hesitation John Lewis Temple straight in there. I don't know what story is with Griff at the moment. I don't even think Griff made the bench on Monday, did he?
I don't believe he did.
Yeah, like, that's another kind of mystery. You don't really know. Like, he was supposed to be back, I think, and then obviously he wasn't togged out in Galway either. I don't, himself and Mark Hoyle weren't togged out. So I'd have no issue. Like, I wouldn't be looking, if Lewis Temple does start on Friday, I wouldn't be looking at it going, oh, I don't know about that one.
Like, I think he was really assured in the first game of the season. I think he looked like a polished player. I think he didn't look like an academy player, which is a bit, I know that's a bit of a weird thing to say, but like, he just looked solid. I think
yeah, I can describe it. I have a thing about that. I noticed it in the Leinster Senior Cup game against, I think it was Evergreen, wasn't it? We were all down at it. And
yes,
like, he stood out in that game because it was mostly academy players under 20s. You'd know he was a first team player. He just, I don't know what it is. It's the build. He has a bit of confidence about him. A quiet lad, but just like, quietly confident. A bit of an ice man type thing about him. But another giant of a fella. Mind you, I wouldn't fancy taking a thump off him. Yeah, I'd probably stay the same from Monday and just bring Lewis Temple in as that centre back in for Paddy Barrett. So you'd have Gano, Cam, Temple, Malloy, and then obviously Tyreek and that kind of extra midfielder role with JJ and John O'Sullivan. Not banking on Coyler being available. I don't know, but I'm just fearing the worst and imagining he's not there. And then, like, the front three, like, you'd watch Jarvis, Smith and Martin from Monday. Would you stick with that? See, I think the big question mark on that one is, it's Boydie.
Like, yeah, I thought Boydie, when he did come on, it was just a completely different performance than what he's offered in Galway. I think he did a lot of things well, and I think he really made a bit of a nuisance of himself in a good way, a very positive way. And I think he'd caught, like, against Pats in Inchicore, he was a nightmare for them. Absolute nightmare.
Yeah, I'm going to go full justice for Boydie again. Yeah. Because...
right back at...
And I'm not saying he should start an 11 type thing, but the way he's being refereed at the minute is not fair. And we actually got a message into the group chat number. Again, probably my fault for not plugging it every week, but that number is always open, 085-166-6784. Any thoughts, opinions on anything within the club, by all means, get on to us, let us know what you think. But we did get a message in, again, no name on the end of it, so we can't, short of giving out your phone number on the airways, we can't really do anything in terms of recognising who sent it. But this person did say, the way Boyd is refereed is absolutely farcical. I'm going to leave out some of the name calling just here, to be fair, but Rob Hennessy instantly looked to give him a yellow card, and then after that, the Rovers players were all over him, hanging out of him for the rest of the game, without Boyd getting a single free kick his way. Then the moment Boyd touches them, no matter how little the contact is, it's an instant foul. It's a complete joke at this stage. The refs are not good in general, but Hennessy, I'm not going to finish that. I'm not going to finish that bit off. But I do think there's a point there, and part of it is probably Boydie's own fault. You know, your reputation precedes you type stuff.
Yeah.
But that's bullshit as well. Refs shouldn't be going into games with like a preconceived notion of a player. I know they do, and like, they mark each other's card, and it's like, yeah, keep an eye out for Sean Boyd. He's a bit of a mouthpiece, or he's a bit of a this, that, or the other. I know refs do it. I don't think they should, but it is definitely done. But is it a case now where Boydie's going to be more effective coming off the bench and maybe being able to go full wrecking ball for like 20 minutes at the end? Like, I don't know. I don't know where the balance is there with Boydie.
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one. Do you want to get your line in about I'm not one for referee bashing before I go on?
No, because if I say it, Reggie's going to be straight in with, oh, get the meme, say the line of duty. I'm not one for referee bashing. Hilarious stuff.
It's not the first instance of it happening. it happens pretty much every time he's on the pitch. I think he's incredibly harshly refereed across the board. He doesn't get many fouls because it's his reputation. Like, it's very rare he'll go down and he'll get something. But as soon as he does anything, it's, oh, he's off again. It totally unfair. Going into a game like that, you should never, and it's not just him. Like, it happens with some players for diving every foul. It's, ah, get up. Like, it just shouldn't be a thing, but it seems to happen across the board.
Yeah, I think Farrell kind of suffered from that a little bit as well. That kind of, you know, going down a little bit easily maybe, and that's kind of followed Shane around a little bit. Like, it does happen, but at the same time, it's not really fair. Like, Boydie's a big L unit. It's just naturally centre-halves are going to try and kick lumps out of him because he's kicking lumps out of them as well, which we've seen with Boydie and Josh Honahan, which is very funny because Owen Smith, the greatest photographer in the world, got a great snap of Boydie hanging out of your man Josh Honahan's leg, which is very funny. But
just wouldn't let him go. Like, it's seeing out of cheaper by the dozen.
Yeah, yeah.
And let him go, trying to get away.
But, like, that's allowed. You know, like, contact sport, it's not, you know, it's not like tag rugby or something like that where you can't be physical at all. It's, leave him at it. Like, if other people want to get into a scrap with him, then ref it as you see it. Don't just lean on, oh, well, that's Sean Boyd, has been trouble before. Like, that's not really fair. Justice for Boydie, I say. But we won't shirk away from the question, Ben. Do you start them on Friday against Pats, or do you not?
I think you do. I think he was an absolute nuisance in Chicor. I could be wrong, but I think he was the one to get both assists.
He did, yeah.
So, look, when he offers that, I think it's very hard to leave him out. And I think he was really, really positive. Look, you can say what you will about his energy off the bench, but I think if John Martin does go to the bench, I think he gives you that energy as well when he comes on. I think they're very similar in that regard. So, in my opinion, I'd be all for starting Boydie.
I'd love at some stage this season to go full bastard up front. Just go John Martin and Boydie. Maybe play Matty Smith in the hole behind him for his shithousery. Get Coyler back into the midfield to run around and boot a few people. So throw Wardy in as well, getting a few people's ear. Imagine, it'd be one of the most hated 11s ever to play in the League of Ireland. The villagers would have their pitchforks and all out going after them. I love Boydie. I think he's very, very important. All I wish is that we could stick with the same striker for a few games in a row. That's what I'd like, whoever it may be, just to get a bit of familiarity. And so the other one, actually, I haven't even mentioned him because obviously he didn't play Monday, is Liam Burt. Like, does Liam Burt start as one of your tens? Or is he another one? Like, do you want his impact coming off the bench?
I think he's very important. I think he'd had, like, would have to be in there for me.
So we've typically kind of gone with a front three. What's your front three then?
I think for me it would have to be Jarvis, Boyd and Burt.
See, I don't think I'd start Jarvis on Friday. I just don't think he hasn't really looked. I mean, again, we always make the joke about the manager, you know, how laid back he always says Jarvis is. He came out to do his warm up in the Galway game and, like, never seen a lad look as relaxed and just as, it just looks like he's going to play in a kickabout. He doesn't actually look phased or, I mean, like, some lads start to kind of get the game face on and, like, you wouldn't want to get in their way or anything like that. Jarvis just doesn't give me them vibes at all. He's so laid back. And
what was the manager's line? If he was any more laid back, he'd be horizontal.
Yeah. That was the one. I think I'd like to see on Friday Boyd, Smith and Burt, I think, as my attacking three. obviously Mike Smith and Burt off Boydie, say that's what I'd like to say. But again, it's just like endless possibilities. I think the main question is going to be at the back there, what we do with Paddy Barrett. Would I be totally shocked to see Griff come straight back in? No, probably not. There could have been a part of the staff maybe expecting Paddy to pick up that yellow over the course of the Galway or the Rovers game. So I don't know. Maybe it was a case of, you know what, we'll just leave Griff out, aiming towards, you know, the game when Barrett's going to miss one. That wouldn't surprise me either. But it's kind of like no 11 would surprise you. That's the mad thing. Usually it's quite predictable and you'd have a good old crack off guessing, but things difficult at the moment as well. Pretty good time to play Pats. Haven't won a game in three. Look like they're struggling a little bit. Joe Redmond went off injured up in the Brandywell on.
It hasn't really clicked for them, I don't think, just over the last few games. Like, look, I haven't watched the games back fully, but even in highlights and stuff that you see, they're just not up to a whole lot. But that just means they're going to be up for it. It's a big derby game. Like, you can never. I think this is probably the most competitive the league has been. Anyone can take points off anyone. So I don't think it would be out of the realms of possibility for them to come out and be really strong. Like, they are still a good side. There's no doubts about that.
It's a huge game Friday as well. Just in terms of trying to break that run of games without a win after starting so well. Feels like a big game. It's a big game for Pats as well. They're down a couple of bodies. I think Rory Keaton is injured again. That's their main man. Who I did. No, I'm not going to say it because if anything happens on Friday, I'll be left with.
No, go on.
I was going to say, I did say at the start of the season, I thought he was going to be a mega flop and he wasn't going to work out at all for them. But if he's missing, Joe Redmond would be a massive loss. It's feels like a big, big game for both sides. I'm confident. I do think we'll win the game. But anything can happen in these games. Something I mentioned in the intro, what in the name of God is the Richmond Derby?
I actually genuinely don't know what it is.
The official league Twitter or X page put that out. And I remember I looked at it, kind of done a double take on it.
Wait, that was real?
That's what and when I looked at it first, it looked like a bad Photoshop or.
I thought that was a wind up.
And then I thought it said something about Redmond Derby. I was like, what the fuck are they on about? But the Richmond Derby isn't a thing. Whoever put that up, here. Like, you could have went down any angle possible to promote the game. The Richmond Derby is just not a thing. You could have talked about disputed league titles, anything at all. But no, the Richmond Derby's not a thing. Anyway, we're going to beat Pats because Pats are shite.
Where does it come from? Is it so?
Richmond Road versus Richmond Park. Like,
absolute bollocks.
That's bollocks. It's fucking stupid. Anyway, Saturday, the Avenir Sports All Ireland Cup. A solid performance. Pearl Slattery, who we sat down with last week, got great response to that. Pearl came across as well as we knew she would. She bleeds Shelbourne Football Club. She just loves it. I think it came across really well in the interview. But when we stopped recording, she did warn us about that Cork team and said that is not going to be any kind of walk in the park. They'd signed a couple of Americans. She said, oh, really impressive. It's going to be a very, very difficult game. And then Gemma Quinn comes in and bangs in a hat-trick in 25 minutes and game over.
Yeah, look, talk about performances. And, like, I think people maybe when they saw Gemma not starting as much, you'd be like, oh, what is she offering? Is she there? It's maybe a leadership role and some cameos. Maybe there was some speculation. She's definitely there to play a part and a big part at that. I think Pearl in the pod did say she was one of the fastest players, and I think that was definitely proven because she just got onto every loose ball. She just chased everything.
And that's if you wanted to sum up probably Gemma Quinn, what she's all about, those goals sum it up. Pure desire, energy, pace, athleticism. it's just leaving people for dust. Like, she really did. She just showed a clean set of heels for every goal. Composed finishes.
Just a level above. Just, and that's saying something, because that Cork side, as Pearl said, they have looked impressive. They have made signs. But Gemma just looked like, she looked at it. Like, serious performance. And definitely, again, a selection headache.
100%, but that's unplayable. See that raw pace and strength and desire? It's very difficult to contain it. It's like,
you can't teach that either.
No, you can't. And look, maybe it is a case of the fact she hasn't started games. She's so wound up and so eager. But a lot of times that can go the other way. And when a player is so eager to impress, tries too hard, and it can fall flat in its face. Not in Gemma's case. She was brilliant, unplayable. It was the Gemma Quinn show, really. Five changes, I think it was, to the starting 11 from the draw with Rovers. I've been thinking about this All-Ireland Cup, right? And I'm fairly sure I said, when it was me, you and Adam sat down and talked about the competition and said, probably a chance to rest players, you know, give fringe players a few minutes, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if I would approach it that way anymore, because the more I thought about it, it's not like the games are pigeonholed in, you know, midweek, the way the League Cup used to be on the men's side, where, you know, you're playing Friday, Tuesday, or Friday, Wednesday, whatever it might be. Like, it's a standalone weekend. It's a game on its own. I would lean on, you know, go full whack, full pelt, but I think Owen Whelan's in that lucky spot where he can make five changes, and like, those five players coming in are not really weakening the team. Like,
such a strong starting lineup. Like, look, there's changes, but they're kind of like, you're going from strength to strength. Like, there's no, as you said, like, you're not weakening the side in any way.
No, like, Nia Hannan, Lucy O'Rourke, Mia Dodd, Hannah Healy, Gemma Quinn, all came in. They get into every single squad in the league, not like without question. Probably starting for nearly every single team as well. So, but it's a lucky old spot to be in. But he spoke to Sean after the game, Owen Whelan did, and like, he kind of laughed and said, I want a selection headache. I don't want it to be easy to pick an 11. And like, when the likes of Kiva Keen, Alex Kavanagh aren't playing, and you're still coming out with a 3-0 win against, as you said, a Cork team who have been a lot better than I think everyone expected to be. It's the only way is forward, really, you'd have to say.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think it's one of those where, you know, the last few weeks, it's been difficult games, and maybe what's happening on the pitch is not reflecting the results. And I think that's a big result. Like, I think it's just few goals in, like, a confidence thing. And I think they're just really going to kick on now. I think it's going to be big now for the rest of the season.
And the big games keep rolling. They're away to Wexford on Saturday, 6 p.m. kickoff. Pay at the gate if you are planning to travel. a Wexford team that have struggled. They're bottom of the table at the moment. Not a lot of people would have predicted that in pre-season, I can tell you. It's a difficult, difficult place to go. But again, something the Pearl spoke to us about off camera was, like, teams going to take points off each other this year. It's not a thing anymore where the likes of a Cork, a Treaty, a Sligo kind of cut adrift at the bottom. It used to be, well, I certainly always felt like you'd look at the league table and you'd look for the fixtures with Piemont and Wexford, and it'd kind of be, you know, they're the big ones to look at. Like, now, every single game is just on a knife edge. It's so, so tight. It's, anybody can beat anybody, but I think going down to a Wexford team that are struggling, you probably need to win these games, really, don't you? If you really want to push and really want to have a proper pop off winning the league this year, you probably need to be winning. At the end of the day, it's the team that are bottom of the table. You probably need to be winning it, don't you, really?
Yeah, it's an
unenviable. No pressure, by the way.
No, it's an unenviable position because there again, we said it for the men's side of things. The leagues, especially on the women's side this season, people just can take points off anyone. So it is difficult to predict any game. And I think you look at the start of the season, you wouldn't really predict where Wexford are. But they're only going to be up for the game. So it's just, it's a tough one, but you would expect to win. And I do expect to win. I think the quality we have, and just in terms of rotation and depth, I just think we will be a bit too much for them.
Here's hoping. Look, Wexford coming off the back of, they tonked Cliftonville in the All-Ireland Cup as well. So they will be confident. It's a big, big game. P-Mount are playing Galway as well. So somebody's going to drop points there. Feels like an opportunity. Hopefully we get a decent crowd down. And as I say, it's 6 o'clock kickoff. It's in Ferrycarrig Park. And pay at the gate if you are planning to travel. Ben, few little bits. We're almost there. We're coming up to, what are we at? Are we at 11 o'clock? Yeah, yeah, bang on the nose. So I won't keep you much longer.
On a school night, duty.
I know, on a school night, it's terrible, isn't it? Terrible. You probably have homework or something to be correcting. Just a few other bits knocking around. Noel King, new Dundalk manager, Ben. That started to break on the way back from Galway on Friday.
Yeah, it was
bit of a stretch.
Bit of a strange one, isn't it? Like, no interview, I think, has come out since, and it was just a case of a phone call. Look, can't argue with the experience. Obviously, good servant for the club, so you would wish him well.
Yeah, just so left field. It stinks a little bit of jobs for the boys as well, which doesn't usually tend to end well. But, I mean, I don't give a shite, to be totally honest. I wouldn't be overly fussed if Dundalk got relegated. Not having to go to that dump would...
Do you not want to hear the ding-dong, no?
Ah, see that place? Something weird happens there every time we play there. You remember when the Sopranos been brought on the pitch one of the games? And they had the worst version of the Sopranos intro as well, which made it 10 times worse. And they just constantly played it. It was like on a loop the whole time we were there.
Like that episode of Father Ted, where they only had one record.
It's a weird, weird spot, Dundalk. So, yeah, hopefully they are relegated. We don't have to deal with them anymore.
Shooting from the hip.
Yeah, look, it's the only way to be. You can beat around the bush all you want here, Ben, but realistically... Dundalk for the drop, hopefully. We got another couple of listener comments, questions, whatever you want to call them. Luke Byrne 07, not that Luke Byrne, said, I don't know if it's only me, but I'm not a fan of the music being played as the players walk out onto the pitch. Ben, where do you stand on this one?
I don't mind it. I think it builds the atmosphere. I know, look, you can say, let the fans do their chanting, but some games, you never know. If there's new fans, they might know what to say. I think maybe it could be played and then drowned out a little bit earlier.
But yeah, I'd lean on that. I think kind of, I'd base it off when the tunnel comes out.
Yeah.
I would probably start to knock it off.
Just let the acoustics of the stadium take it
and off. To be fair, the other issue I think with it is you can actually hear the music now, which you couldn't before. So I think it's a bit more pronounced now than it would have been. But yeah, I've seen a few people comment on it. Maybe just kill the music a little bit quicker and let the Riverside do its thing. Jer McMahon was on. I may as well go full whack on this one. Exiting through the Ballybock end, was that some sort of piss take? Now, as I say, I wasn't at the game. I did do a bit of digging. But for some reason, the home supporters were led down to the Rovers end, obviously to be brought around. I don't know whether everyone actually knows that's there, but there's a laneway at the back of the Ballybock end. So some of the home fans were allowed out that way to avoid the congestion at the tunnel. But, I mean, playing Rovers, what do you expect? A few people got pelted with coins and other kind of stuff. Then I think the guards put an end to it and were like, nope, nobody's coming out this way. Send them all back. I don't know, you were probably too busy, Ben, but did you take any heed of that at the time?
To be honest, I didn't actually see anything at the time, as you alluded
Your
to.
Your Honour, I didn't see anything.
I was a little bit preoccupied with the fact that everyone else on the media team, apart from Owen Smith, the GOAT, decided not to turn up. But yeah, I didn't actually see anything. I'd only heard after the game, and the first instinct was, why? That's like probably the stupidest thing you could do. I'd understand for games where you wouldn't have the kind of travelling support of a Rovers or a Bows or a Pats, like the games where it would be a little bit of a more positive atmosphere, let's say. That was fine. I understand trying to clear quicker. It is a bit of a nightmare, especially when the tunnel comes out, when people are stopped and waiting. And it also is a bit much for opposition coming off like there.
Well, this is where I was kind of going to go with it. Look, there is a problem at the kind of Drumcondra end with the congestion. Hopefully now the part of the terracing has opened, kind of where the new stand meets the riverside. So hopefully that will take a bit of the traffic away from there, like at half time and stuff like that. It's a nightmare trying to navigate that area to try and get to the coffee shop or to get any kind of food or anything. It's a disaster. But I know nobody's meant to be in the new stand. I know that. I get that. You know, it's condemned or whatever way you want to phrase it. But when the tunnel is shut, have a couple of stewards up in the new stand and don't let people stop. You know, you're right. You have to keep moving. If you're coming up, you have to keep moving. And as you said, like, it's a prime area to abuse opposition standing there, because we usually sneak onto the pitch at the end there because it's just quicker to get set up and stuff. And like,
you see it, you hear it.
Oh, it's.
I'm not going to say, don't do it. Do whatever you want at games. Sometimes it's quite funny, but like, it also can be like a safety hazard.
Yeah, I just think
you're asking for trouble, I think.
Yeah, and I know, look, I don't know whether we could like be fined or whatever for people going up to the new stand, but we are going to end up with a fine eventually if that crowd is always allowed to gather at the new stand, at the tunnel, rather, because it's just going to happen. I don't think there's any way around it. So, yeah, I would much prefer to see people just be allowed to go up and over the tunnel. It would alleviate all that pressure at the end. I just think that is probably the most sensible way about it. Quiet enough, if we want to call it mailbag this week, not a whole lot of people in touch. I think there was just so much going on over the weekend, to be honest. People didn't really know where to start.
A lot of fixtures.
Yeah, speaking of starts, Ben, something new is going to start next week.
Oh, here we go.
There it is. Not everyone will be familiar with that music, but that is the Mastermind music, Ben. We are going to start Shelburne Mastermind. Anyone, you're a good bit younger than me, Ben. Familiar with Mastermind?
I am, yeah. I know it a little bit.
So, the gist of it is this. Every week, we'll look for interest for us to see kind of how many people are interested in getting involved. The way it works is you basically have a specialist subject, anyone who's never actually watched Mastermind. So, you choose your specialist subject. It obviously has to be Shells related. You could pick a player. You could pick a time frame in the club's history. You could pick a particular season. You could pick Shells in Europe. Or you could pick the history of Chipper Vance and Halke. Whatever you want to pick.
Or if you're Reggie, some of the worst players that have ever played for the Reds.
Yes. And the way it will work basically is you get 10 questions on your specialist topic. You'll have 5 seconds to answer each question. And then you'll be asked 10 questions of just general Shells knowledge. So it could be anything. Point for each correct answer, and at the end of whatever amount of people we get are interested, if we get 5 people, it'll last 5 weeks, we'll do one a week. If we get 10 people, we'll go 10 weeks, we'll go as long as we need to go to get everyone involved. The prize is a signed home jersey from this season. So it'll be the squad of players that are going to lead us into Europe, which for anyone who's following the club any decent period of time would be a massive deal to have. And above all that, Ben, it'd be good crack. That's the most important thing. If there is a draw with the points tally at the end of it, between two people or three people, we'll have a showdown, hopefully live on the pod. So that's the plan going forward. If you are interested in getting involved in the Shelburne Mastermind, reach out to us on any of the social media platforms. You'll catch me on Twitter. You're more of an Instagram man, Ben, I know. Go directly. Shells FC is the Twitter handle, Instagram. I'm going to throw this into the Shells fan group as well on Facebook. Or alternatively, that number that we use for the group chat, it's 085-166-6784. Doesn't have to be you. If you know somebody, like you might have a dad, an uncle, a granny, somebody like that who is just a bit of a Shells brain box, anyone is eligible. We'll take anybody on. No problem. Get in touch. Let us know if you're interested. Even if you want to touch base with us in Talca, we're always in the same place. Down at the tunnel, it's generally where you'll find somebody. So get involved is all I'd say to you. It's a great prize. Be good crack. And I'm a bit of a quiz master. I like asking questions. So that if for nothing else, make me have to sweat by thinking up 20 questions every single week on top of prepping for this podcast. So get involved.
I hope you get 100 entries and you're sitting there doing questions all day.
Ben, before we go, the Richie Rankins. You're either a Richie Baker in life, sound fella, you hold the door open for people, you thank your bus driver, or you're a Richie Winter. You're just a miserable existence. A miserable, miserable existence. This week, Ben, who is your Richie Baker?
Ooh, who's my Richie Baker? Dude, you put me on the spot here.
Do you want me to do my two first? Give me a bit of, give me a chance.
Go on, go on.
I know it's a bit of a, well, no, it's not. We'll go into this in a little bit more detail. So my Richie Baker for this week is you. Because the shite you had to deal with on Monday, it's an unenviable task. I was unavailable. Reggie was away. Darren was away. Owen Smith is obviously busy with his photo finger, so that rules him out. So you are a one-man show, basically. And there is an awful lot to do on a match day. It's not just a case of like doing an interview at the end. Like on a standard match night, there's team sheets. The manager has to do his pre-match interview for TV, or it was obviously Virgin Media in this case. There's match updates to be done, match graphics have to be done. We run the Comet, so that's the, if you go to FAI Connect and you use it like a live score or a flash score, one of us is the one, it's usually Reggie, is the one updating FAI Connect, so that's a job in itself. The manager then has to do his club post-match interview, he has to do the press huddle, he has to do his TV interview, whether that's LOI TV or Virgin Media. And then there's a player interview as well, which is thrown in on top of all that. And you were the one-man band, Ben, that handled it all on your own. So for that, you are my Richie Baker for this week. My Richie Winter, Richie Winters this week is whoever was responsible for ushering the Riverside towards the Ballybock end of the ground to try and alleviate the pressure. I don't understand it. Mad L decision. Very, very lucky nobody was seriously hurt. And please don't do that again. Ben, you're Richie Rankins.
I'll go Richie Baker. I'll go Pearl. Look, obviously, we did the video recording of the pod for the first time, and that's obviously available on YouTube now, I think. And yeah, she's just great. She just bleeds Shelburne, like, she's just so passionate about the club, and I think that shouldn't go under the radar, shouldn't go unnoticed, and I don't think it does. But look, I think it's an unbelievable watch, an unbelievable listen, and she's a great story, and her love for the club really, really comes across in everything she says and does. She is the epitome of what Shelbourne should be. So I think that's where I have to go with it this week. Duty for the Richie Baker anyway. And Richie Winter. I'm going to throw Adam Leonard under the bus. sorry, Ads. All I wanted was, you know, a little bit of rotation, just hit the bench for a little bit. I know you're probably busy doing something and it's not your fault at all, but here, I'm throwing you under. So that's what I'm going with.
You and Adam Leonard have a bit of a feud going at the moment, I think. This, you're feuding with everyone in the club at the moment, Ben.
Me? I don't feud with anyone.
No, yeah, I'm sure you don't.
Dude, you're one to talk about feuds now.
No. My feuding days are over. They are well and truly over. Ben, that's us for this week. As I say, Shelbourne Mastermind will start next week. Get in touch. You can find us anywhere. In person at the game, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You'll find us anywhere you want. Get in touch. Get involved. Assigned jersey from this season, the group of players that's going to lead us into Europe for the first time since 06, a fantastic prize, and all you have to do is answer a few questions. Ben, thank you very much for giving up your... This is night time now, it's not even evening.
Absolutely no problem. Definitely happy to be here. I do love our little chats.
At least somebody does, Ben. Thank you very much. See you on Friday. Up the Reds.
Up the Reds.
Thanks for listening to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelbourne FC, Dublin's finest since 1895. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify, and subscribe now to never miss a new episode.